Welcome to This is Altadena, a podcast hosted by the Altadena Libraries, celebrating the people, experiences, and hidden histories of Altadena, California. I'm Ben Eisen. In this episode, we explore a medium new to our library collection, zines. Library staffers Chloe Cavalier and Alice Wynn discuss the history and future of zines and their place as a unique form of expression in libraries. Then later, Chloe meets with Bob Lucas Memorial Library Manager Diana Wong to discuss the new and improved demonstration garden.
In the new year, we at the Altadena Libraries have been doing a lot of work examining what role libraries play in communities as we continue to grapple with existing challenges around social unrest, inequity, injustice, and relatively new challenges like a global pandemic. Long gone are the days that libraries were simply warehouses of books dictated by closed-off library staff and only available to a certain echelon of community members. Libraries are much more now. Community hubs, places to connect with neighbors, catalysts for social change. Some even go so far as to say that libraries are a movement. As libraries continue to evolve in their roles in communities, so should the types of materials included in collections and the voices that are highlighted. Zines, one of the great equalizers of printed media, have been around for centuries promoting social change and opening the public's eyes to new voices. Some of the earliest zines include Thomas Paine's famed 1775 pamphlet, Common Sense, and Margaret Fuller and Ralph Waldo Emerson's The Dial in the 1840s that spurred the early Transcendentalist movement. Despite their long history and impact, zines were most recently introduced to the Altadena Libraries through a workshop we held just a few years back by Chicana zinester Alma Rosa Rivera of the Los Angeles-based Frijolera Press. Since that time, we've expanded our commitment to zines by creating a special collection of zines in the Altadena Libraries, led by our fearless zinester, Alice. Well, Alice, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about zines. You are our resident zine expert, so I figured there's no one better to sort of open the door for me personally, as well as our community, to this awesome art form that few people, I think, know about. I think it's very much still a subculture, but we're doing a lot to introduce it to a wider audience. So let's start off with the very basics. What is a zine?
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast today. So a zine is actually a shortened word for fanzine, which is a portmanteau or a compound word of the words fan and magazine. So you put those two words together and you get fanzine, and then you just chop off the fan. So essentially, it's a homemade magazine about whatever the author is obsessed about or into or a fan of. They can be from anything like your American Girl doll collection or your neighbor across the street. It could even be about personal topics. We call those zines personal zines, but it can be anything small or big. Doesn't matter the size.
Awesome. Why are you so passionate about them? Because I know you've been a champion for zines at our library. I'm curious, do you have a history with making zines yourself? How did you sort of get into the zine culture?
Yeah, so I started making zines basically when I had access to, when I first had access to a computer. I remember I would make music fanzines about my favorite bands, and I would get images off of the internet and hope that if I ever published it, I would not come under the law due to copyright protection. but I never knew they were zines. I just thought of them as mock-ups for magazines. But then when the summer going into high school, my cousin came to town and brought a book called Whatcha Mean, What's a Zine by Esther Pearl Watson and Mark Todd. And we actually have that in our collection at the Altadena Library. And that book is an amazing introduction to the history of zines and why you would want to make a zine, how you can make zines, the different types of zines to make, and how to distribute them. And it has a bunch of entries from zinesters from all around the world. So it's super inspiring. And I still return to it after... I've been doing zines for half my life, so I still return to it from time to time after all these years, since it's such an amazing source.
Oh, I love that. That's so inspiring. I love that a book could make such an impact and sort of open your eyes to a world of this whole culture and history that you might not have known before.
Yeah, it definitely put words to something that I had been doing, and it gave me a lot of inspiration as a kid from the suburbs. It gave me things to look forward to. And it helped me understand that the creative outlet that I had, there was a whole history of a culture behind it. And it, it sounds cheesy to say, but it definitely made me feel less alone as a preteen, or I guess I was a teenager. And I was so inspired. The first official zine that I made, I sold it for 50 cents at Skylight Books when I was 14. And it was such an ego boost to me to hear that it was probably like 4 pages. But it was such an ego boost to me to hear from the zine person that was working there that it sold out really quickly.
Awesome.
I was like, what? Like, why would anybody have any interest in this? I don't know. It just, that really fueled me to keep on going.
Oh, absolutely. It's this sort of form of this creative connection between people who might not have otherwise found each other. And it reminds me a little bit of the bits and pieces that you've shared with me about the history of zines and how it sort of, they got formed and how they really gained a following over the years. Could you share a little bit about some of that history with us?
Of course. Yes. So the first zine, the first fanzine that we really know of and that the general population has an agreement that this is the first fanzine that we know of is The Comet, which was a science fiction fanzine made in the 1930s in Chicago, Illinois, a wonderful town, which also shout out to Quimby's Bookstore in Chicago. Anyway, as the decades went on, a lot of people started making more fanzines. In the 1960s, there were Star Trek fanzines, but in the 1970s, there was a fanzine from the punk underground of Los Angeles called Flipside, and that was actually based out of Whittier and Pasadena, which is really cool, and I've gotten my hands on a couple copies of Flipside because one of my former teachers has a bunch, and they're incredible documents of an underground culture that there has been so much written about that subculture. But it was amazing to read firsthand experiences. The decades progressed, and in the 1990s, of course, there was underground youth music and zine explosion out of Olympia, Washington, and Washington, D.C. The Riot Girl movement came from both of those areas, and Riot Girl fanzine was a feminist zine, which has inspired so many people around the globe and continues to do so today. And in the most recent decade, zine fests have become very popular. Definitely in Los Angeles, there are a lot of zine fests. Shout out to the LA Zine Fest. There are a lot of zine fests and independent publication festivals. And unfortunately, of course, these have had to be put on pause because of the pandemic. But because so many people have been staying home, there has been a renewed interest in the production of DIY zines.
Yes.
Emphasis on DIY, of course. Of course, zines are DIY. I just wanted to emphasize the do-it-yourself.
Totally. No, and I think the fact that, like, at the very most basic, a zine could literally be a couple pieces of copier paper, maybe folded in half, with then clippings and writing or even typed sections cut and paste onto it. I think it is a medium that anyone could engage with, no matter their level of experience with normal craft supplies or whatever. It sort of meets everyone where they are in a very unique way compared to maybe other crafts or artistic expressions out there.
Oh, 100%. Zines will meet you wherever you're at with your skill set. If you don't think you're as good an illustrator as you could be, or if you think that you want to hone your poetry skills or your writing skills, or if you think that, you know, you're not as great a photographer as you could be, it does not matter. Zines do not care about where you think you should be. It's just an immediate form of getting your worldview and your work out there.
And now I know we've mentioned that we are housing some zines in our collection, and that you had mentioned also putting your zine in a local bookstore. What are some of the other ways traditionally that zines have been distributed in communities?
Yeah, so there are so many ways where you can get your zines out there. But if you're giving away your zines for free, there are so many ways that you can distribute them. You could go to Nordstrom's, try on a trench coat and slip in your zine in the pocket. Or you could go to a bus stop and leave your zine on the bench there. Or at the airport, when you're reading a glossy fashion magazine, just slip your zine into the pages. For example, I made a zine about my favorite sandwiches in the area, in the Pasadena area. And after work one day, I went to Roma Market, which I put on the list, and I bought a sandwich and I just handed the zine to the cashier. That wasn't a plug.
I love it.
One really big traditional way that zines have been circulated is zines by, for, and about people in the punk underground have been distributed at music shows. For example, I heard at music shows, people approach each other, or at least used to approach each other when we had music shows, and give each other zines just casually for free. And that's a big way that zines are distributed, or were distributed, and will continue to be distributed after the pandemic.
Yes, we look forward to it.
Another traditional way also of getting your zines out there is to attend zine workshops at your local library, which I know there have been a lot of them before the pandemic.
Now, I think when we look at libraries and we think about zines, the two are very intrinsically connected, both because I imagine that many a zinester over the years has visited their local library and photocopied their zine, maybe at a library copier. And so I'm curious, with this now zine collection in our library, what are some of your goals for the zine collection as we build it out and expand our distribution of the zines in our community?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And that's also a really great observation too. There is a really great connection between libraries and zines and zine making. Zine making is practically immediate compared to publishing a book or even a magazine article. There are so many things going on in our local communities and in the world, And there are so many perspectives of those events that don't get the big mainstream platforms that our peers who publish books or work in magazines probably would. So because of that, because of the immediacy of zines and the ability to share firsthand experiences of events, we make, promote, and distribute zines. The Altadena Zine Library is working with this in mind, and we want to promote voices and perspectives that are marginalized, misrepresented, and underrepresented by society and by mainstream forms of media for whatever reason. We want this to be a collection where people don't have to do a lot of digging or a lot of research to find reflections of their own worldviews and experiences. And one of my teachers at the Pasadena City College Library paraprofessional program talked about this idea of doing programming from the bottom up. So instead of programming and collection development from the bottom up, and the Altadena Zine Library works with that in mind as well. So we want the community to know that they can be a part of the library. And our collection isn't made up of HarperCollins or Simon & Schuster or, you know, these big names in publishing. It's made up of our neighbors, or it's made up of people in the music world that we admire, or people whose political writing we admire, you know, people whose illustrations or photographs we admire. It's not these big names, but it's
the people we know and the people that actually represent our community. I think when you look at publishing and the world of publishing and then how that trickles into libraries, there's a lot of gatekeeping that happens against a lot of communities, and it shows up in how diverse collections are or the lack of diversity in library collections. And I think zines are sort of a great way to help level that playing field because of the immediacy that you talk about and the way that, like, we are accepting donations, right, for our zine library of people in our community.
Exactly. And we're accepting donations from people all over the world who, you know, just randomly find our Instagram and are like, oh, I make zines. I want to be a part of that. And yeah, exactly. There's a lot of gatekeeping in the publishing world, and we want the zine collection to counter the negative themes that are pushed by a lot of popular books. I know from the internet, or from reading the internet and reading zines, and from my own personal experience and talking to my friends, there are a lot of popular books out there that a lot of their themes don't really get questioned because they're by a hot author, or for some reason, for whatever reason, they're just pushed by their publisher and they're a great hot new title, but actually the work itself really harms specific communities. So one thing that we try to do while we build our collection at the Zine Library is to counter that and be a supplement to that. While the popularity of those big books gets questioned, or while the questioning of that popularity itself becomes popular, we have these zines that are firsthand accounts by marginalized communities that are affected by those books.
That's that idea of the hashtag own voices. That's very, it's growing in popularity, I think, in the library field, that talks about the importance of having representation in your collection, sure, but having the stories about certain groups of people being told by members of those groups. And I think, again, that's all about our mission at the Altadena Libraries is bringing people and ideas together. And a big part of that is making sure that it's the ideas of those communities being represented, not necessarily ideas that are going to cause more harm, like you talked about. And I think this is I'm excited to see the future of the zine library and how it'll continue to grow, because it'll just continue to share stories that maybe have never been told, or even more of those hidden histories, as we talk about in our community, that deserve the spotlight and deserve to be heard.
Yeah, exactly.
So wait, no, I want to know, I think we are in the process of publishing a zine by the Altadena Library staff.
Yes.
Are you willing to talk a little bit about that and where people can hope to find it if they want to read more?
Yeah, we are putting together a zine called Books I've Loved in 2020, and it's all content from the Altadena Library staff. They sent in blurbs about their favorite books, and I've printed them and pasted them onto these pages. And it's a super exciting way to get to know your library staff and what we've been reading. Since the library has closed, it's been a really big bummer for many reasons, but one of the reasons is we can't see the public anymore, which is a huge reason why people get into library work. And so this is hopefully a way for the public to have little pieces of us at home, since we haven't been able to talk to them really unless they call. You can access this zine. I'm pretty sure we're going to distribute it via our little free libraries in Altadena. I'm not sure which little free libraries they are going to, which intersections they are going to be able to be found on. But we will have information about that shortly, definitely.
And it'll be on our website, I believe, as well.
Yes, the digital version will be on our website, for sure.
If anything, this is a great opportunity to get your family together, get a loved one together, throw on a mask and go for a walk and track down a little free library around town and look for the zine in the coming week.
Exactly.
I love it. Well, Alice, anything else to add about zines before we go?
You can always find us online on Instagram at Altadena Zine Library. Right now, since the physical space is closed, we're not accepting donations, but if you tune into our Instagram page, the minute that we will be able to start accepting donations, I will be singing it from our Instagram page, so you will know. But until then, I'm making sure that I'm providing content about zinesters worldwide and local, and activities that we can do together, on our own, in our pods, during this quarantine.
And you've done a few videos on our YouTube that people find. And you're also, you've been hosting once a month. I think it's the third Saturday of the month at 3:00. Typically, you have a zine workshop on the Instagram Live, and that's, anyone can tune into those. And you've been having great zine guests, zinester guests that are illustrators and writers and rogue zinesters from around the country sort of tuning in. So there's great content for people to get inspired by while we're still closed, so they can be cranking out those zines that are going to fill up our collection once we get reopened again.
Yes. If you ever want to hang out with me and the zine community virtually, just tune into those every third Saturday of the month. Every other third Saturday of the month, we have a special guest. We've had Ben Trogdon of New York City and Olympia, Sophia Zarders of Long Beach, and coming up, we have the famed V. Vail of San Francisco and Daryl Gusson, who is the editor-in-chief of Razor Cake Fanzine. So I'm really looking forward to our future guests, and I've been loving the conversations that we've been having with our past guests. So please tune in if you can.
Awesome. Thank you, Alice. Thank you for the time, and thank you for the zines.
Thank you so much.
It's a new year, and we have a new garden. The outdoor space at the Bob Lucas Memorial Library has been transformed to embrace restorative gardening practices that will save water, help regenerate the local ecosystem, and help educate locals on what is possible in their own backyard. Here's Chloe Cavalier's interview with Bob Lucas Memorial Library Manager Diana Wong.
Well, I'm happy to sit down here with Diana Wong, our branch manager at the Bob Lucas Memorial Library and Literacy Center, to talk a little bit about an exciting project that's been going on at our branch on Lincoln. So, Diana, why did we embark on this change to the traditional lawn and landscaping outside the branch?
Hi, Chloe. So, through community conversations and town hall meetings, we learned a few things about our building and the desires of the community. Two main issues that were brought up was to improve the building's physical street presence along the main boulevard, because Bob Lucas Branch doesn't have as much street presence to passerbyers, and despite like it being located on a busy street. And secondly, we were also hearing that people or patrons were wanting more space at our branch, whether it's for programming or space for study. So we sought a solution that would merge the two aspirations together, which would transform the front area into like a really visually and physically inviting community space. So we learned about a grant opportunity through Lincoln Water and local and Metropolitan Water, which allocated funding to like organizations to install a WaterWise demonstration garden. We applied and was approved for funding. And as we are working on more concrete plans and learning about drought tolerant gardening and water saving strategies, we learned from our talented and knowledgeable community members about landscaping technique called regenerative gardening. Regenerative gardening aims to restore the health of the soil by putting nutrients back into the earth through the use of native plants, water capturing methods, and like soil health restoration. As we learn more about how grass and its heavy reliance on water and how it's damaging to the soil, we decided to move forward with this approach. And through the process, we are restoring the natural ecosystem through like a sustainable practice. And also this gardening, which is like something that we aim to do, is like very doable for homeowners to replicate at home to help save water. But as we found out through the whole process, learning about plants and animals, the ecosystem, the history of the land in this area, as a result, we really deepened our understanding of the natural world and its connection to everything around us.
Turned out so beautiful. And I really highlight what you shared about it being a true community effort. I mean, we, as socially distanced as we were, had work days out front of the library and had people of all ages really lending a hand to make it happen. So as people pass by and are enjoying this cool weather on their walks or bike rides, what are some of the elements, the key elements that people could look out for that they might be able to recognize right away?
So when you think of a garden, you think plants. So when you should pass by, you'll see over 35 different native plants and trees in our garden. And there is signage to help you learn about the individual plant, as well as the animals and insects that are attracted to them. You'll see that the bioswell, which the top of this channel starts at the north end of the garden, and it winds its way southward and swirls around the bench. When it rains, water will travel down the street and it's absorbed into the ground. Our garden has a hugel culture on the south end of it, which is basically a small mound or hill that's built from logs. And I think we used cardboard and other decaying matter like wood chips. This mound really helps improve soil fertility and like with water retention. And of course, you'll notice the wonderful bench seating that wraps around underneath the Brazilian pepper tree. The bench, as well as the walkway, is matching. It's made of urbanite, which is broken up concrete. We'll also be installing a couple of bird baths around the garden to provide a water source for wildlife, so people will likely see more birds around.
What is the importance of this type of landscaping on the greater scale?
The landscape has changed dramatically over many years of urbanization, which has really like disrupted the natural functioning ecosystem that would support natural growth and native wildlife species. Without native plants, there are no insects. And because insects are a source of food for birds, that would mean no birds. And with native plants, they are conditioned to thrive in local conditions, which mean like they require less maintenance, saves time and money, and also reduces dependence on water, which is a very valuable resource in this part of the state. Not only are the plants and like the live elements important in our garden, if you take a look at the hardscapes, which is like the bench seating and the walkway, we use a material called urbanite, which is basically repurposed concrete. The broken cracked concrete is taken from demolition jobs and can usually be sourced for free. This reduces the need for energy to make more concrete, as well as it repurposes the material, and then it makes sure that broken concrete isn't just sitting in a landfill.
Fabulous. Now, I know your team is very creative with the types of programs you're always developing, and I know it's a goal once we can open our doors again at the libraries to have more programs available and using more of our outdoor space as well. What's on the horizon as far as different workshops or programs that you have planned out in the new garden space?
We're still doing a lot of planning right now. For right now, for the next couple of months, we're probably doing some online programming that will have either talks or live interviews with like local experts on like the different elements of that are demonstrated in our garden. But in-person opportunities will be available in the future, where we'll ask volunteers to help with maintaining our garden on a monthly basis. These monthly volunteer days will also double as a learning opportunity, as they will have like a different focus depending on the season or the month. So we're excited. And the garden is publicly accessible all day. So as you walk around the neighborhood, take a look around.
Great. Thank you for your time, Diana.
Thank you.
This is Altadena is produced by the Altadena Library District. It is engineered, written, and edited by Ben Eisen, Chloe Cavalier, Michaela Arevalo, and Aaron Kimbrell. Subscribe to the podcast by visiting your favorite podcatcher, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thank you for listening. We'll be back with more stories and hidden histories of our beloved community next time.